Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Independence podcast Behind the Headlines. I'm Assistant Editor Lucy McInerney. Today we're going to be talking about the US election. I'm joined by my colleague Rich Hall, one of our US correspondents, who has been talking to voters on the ground in America in the lead up to November 3rd when polls open about early voting and mail-in voting, which is something that doesn't really exist over on this side of the pond in the UK. So, Rich, can you give us a bit of an explanation about early voting and mail-in voting and what it all means and how it all works?
Yeah, sure. So, mail-in voting and early voting have both been increased dramatically in the US this year because of the pandemic, obviously. People want to vote safely. They don't want to stand in long lines on election day. So states have made efforts to kind of spread out the voting period so people can either drop their mail-in ballots off or vote early and avoid the lines. And that has created some issues, as you can imagine. Just first of all, is just the sheer number of people that are voting by mail is just overwhelming. And these states haven't had to deal with these kind of numbers before. So that's created a set of problems all on its own. And the second issue is concerns about the integrity of mail-in ballots from both sides. So on the one hand, you have President Trump, who insists that mail-in ballots are vulnerable to fraud. And they aren't a safe way, and he's cast doubt on their integrity. And those concerns and those attacks have created a reaction from the Democrats who say that they are now not so confident that they will be allowed to be counted because of this opposition from the Republicans.
And in terms of early voting, just before we get into the nuts and bolts of mail-in voting, how early are we talking? How far in advance of polling day on November 3rd do people receive their ballots? And how does that system work? What do you do when you receive your ballot?
So America has a different rule for each state. So there are 50 states and they each have their own set of rules for handling elections. They're handled at the state level, which makes it very, very confusing for everyone. You have to have kind of education campaigns in each state. So some states will allow weeks in advance, some will allow 1 week in advance, some states will allow those ballots to be counted before election day, some will allow them to be processed before election day. The biggest issues are in states which don't allow them to be counted or processed until election day or afterwards. And that's why we're seeing the biggest issues in places like Pennsylvania, which before this year was primarily just a state where people voted in person and hardly anyone took advantage of mail-in ballots. This year, it's seen one of the biggest increases. So Pennsylvania, the birthplace of American democracy, is deciding not to count mail-in ballots until election day. So that creates a whole series of issues. We could see on election day something that the election monitors are calling a red mirage. So what happens in Pennsylvania and what's happening across the country is that most Republicans are voting on the day. They aren't voting by mail in numbers as large as the Democrats. And those votes in Pennsylvania will be counted first. So what we're going to see on election day in Pennsylvania is Donald Trump take a large lead on the day. What comes next is that the mail-in ballots are then counted over the next 3 days. The Secretary of Elections over there has said that they expect the ballots to be counted within 3 days of the election. So what you're going to see is Donald Trump's lead slowly decrease over those 3 days. And this is where concerns over whether all those ballots will be counted comes into play.
And you were in Pennsylvania not long ago, which is obviously, as you've mentioned, one of the states that swung in favor, surprisingly, in favor of Trump in 2016. You were in Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, and you got to speak to some voters who were taking advantage of early voting. What did they have to say to you? What were they mainly concerned about?
Yeah, so basically, Pennsylvania is expected to swing back to Biden this year, to the Democrats this year, if the polls are to be believed. So what happens in Pennsylvania is people there are very, very concerned that their mail-in ballots won't be counted. It's faced the same problems that other states have faced with the Postal Service, with delays in mail being delivered. And people who were going to vote by mail-in ballot, a lot of them have changed their mind because of all the attention on the issues that Pennsylvania might face. So I met quite a few people who just didn't want to take the risk, and they were either taking their mail-in ballots and delivering them by hand to drop-off boxes, or just deciding to vote early and in person.
And in terms of then the other states that you've become aware of, like what kind of other limitations are being put on people trying to vote by mail in other states across the rest of America that you're aware of?
Texas is another place that is facing issues with mail-in ballots. They have also faced issues with the mail, with delivery times. The issue in Texas has been the number of places where people could drop off their mail-in ballots. Normally there are dozens across the state, across each county, and the governor in Texas decided to limit them to one per county, which meant for some counties that millions of people had one ballot drop-off box where they could drop off their mail-in ballot. Now that's different to actually early voting centers where people could go and cast their ballot. And on election day itself, Texas will have way more polling stations. I also went to Georgia recently. They're facing a similar issue, which was worse in 2018, in fact, than in 2016, with the number of polling stations, which research has shown disproportionately affects people of color. And so you have these areas outside of Atlanta, the predominantly African American areas, and they would face longer lines at polling stations than in white areas, for example. That's been limited this year. They've made some changes which made it slightly easier, but we might still see huge lines there on election day.
I it was interesting. You wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago about changes to the Postal Service, because obviously everything we've kind of touched on thus far has been the individual states, because obviously America is a federalized system, the individual states and their decisions on how to handle mail-in voting. But your piece a few weeks ago talked about the kind of centralized government's impact, what they're trying to do to the general U.S. Postal Service. What exactly have they been trying to kind of pull out of their bag of tricks, as it were, to have an impact on people casting their vote by mail?
Yeah, it's with the Postal Service changes, it's very difficult to kind of pick through fact and fiction, because you probably saw when it went. So let me just start from the beginning. There was a new Postmaster General, which is a fancy name for the head of the Postal Service, that was appointed by a board of governors. We'll go deep into the weeds here, that were mostly Republican. His name was Louis DeJoy, and he was appointed head of the Postal Service. And immediately upon taking up that post, he made sweeping changes to the Postal Service, which had a pretty dramatic impact on its ability to deliver mail in time. This came during the campaign, when the election had already started. People were already mailing their ballots, so you can understand why people were extremely worried. You had Senate hearings, you had Elizabeth Warren challenging him. It also didn't help people's suspicions and fears that Mr. DeJoy, the new head of the Postal Service, was a Trump donor. So people got very panicked. He sat in front of the Senate and he explained these changes were cost-cutting measures. They were essential to keep the Postal Service alive. And then you had the usual politics going on as well. Donald Trump, he said publicly that he would block funding for the US Postal Service because he didn't want absentee ballots being mailed out to everyone. And in so many words, he said, if we give the funding to the US Postal Service, they'll be able to send ballots to everyone and everyone will be able to vote by mail. And he thought his justification was that this wouldn't be safe for the election and people could vote fraudulently. So you had this whole mix of fact and fiction and fears of voters and senators. It's still not actually clear the motivations behind those changes. They have been reversed, some of them, so there isn't as big a problem as many people feared. But as I said, lots of people aren't really taking the risk. They're just deciding to vote in person or drop off their ballots at mail-in ballot boxes.
And from what you've kind of learned over the course of the last several months, whilst you've been paying attention to these changes in the postal service and people's changes in their voting habits, choosing to vote early, etc. I mean, on the Republican side of things, I think as a general statement, they seem to be concerned about the issue of potential voter fraud with mail-in ballots. From your experience, do you think those concerns have any basis in truth? Like, are they well-founded concerns, or are they generally kind of being overhyped?
I can just defer to the head of the FBI who testified on this in a Senate committee. He said that there have been no instances of widespread voter fraud. He directly contradicted the president, and Donald Trump reacted angrily to that. But there have been isolated cases. You get bags of mail go missing in one place. There may be someone may receive the wrong ballot. But on the scale that the Republicans are alleging that they could somehow tip the election or there's some scheme to fraudulently steal the election, it just doesn't exist. There's no evidence for that. And there's been a lot of attention. You can be sure if there was some attempt to rig the election by mail-in ballots, then it would have been found by now because there's just so much attention on it.
And would you say then it's basically an issue that's now at this stage, what are we, 4 or 5 days ahead of the election, split down party lines, that essentially Republicans disagree really strongly with the notion of mail-in ballots and Democrats are supportive of it and even more supportive of early voting in person?
Yeah, and it's funny because that wasn't historically the case. Democrats didn't usually have such an advantage in terms of the number of people that were voting by mail. The pandemic changed everything. Excuse me. The pandemic changed everything. And this kind of speaks to the polarization in America right now. Even with the coronavirus, the way Democrats view it and the way Republicans view it is very differently. And you can see that reflected in how people are choosing to vote. Democrats, on the whole, seem to see the coronavirus as more of a threat than Republicans. And so more of them are voting by mail to avoid those crowds and avoid coming into contact with other people. And it's interesting, if you look at when Donald Trump decided to become or became concerned with mail-in ballots, it was when this advantage started to become clear. There's been some sort of collations of all of his comments on mail-in ballots, and they started around March, April time, maybe a bit after that. There was no kind of widespread Republican concern about mail-in ballots before that, and it coincided with the pandemic.
And so, in terms of what you would how one could very simply boil this down, it's basically that the more early voters and mail-in vote ballots that are sent in, good for Biden, bad for Trump.
Essentially, yeah. And it's interesting because both parties have viewed mail-in ballots as a really useful tool in the past because it's a guaranteed vote. If you lock that vote in early, it's way better because even though people say they're going to vote on the day, people aren't really, really very good at predicting whether they're actually going to vote. Those numbers aren't always accurate. But if you lock in that mail-in ballot early, that's a guaranteed vote. So, I mean, generally, the Democratic advantage in mail-in ballots is a really worrying thing for the Republicans. So basically what needs to happen now on election day is mean, this is what the polls suggest is going to happen anyway, is that Republicans are going to greatly outnumber Democrats on the day in person voting. But again, not everyone who says they're going to vote is going to turn up. So it's a very difficult thing for them.
I suppose on the day, well, when the results and the counts are coming in, is going to be made even more interesting, particularly in relation to two states in particular, which I would say are Florida and Texas, obviously both well known for generally being Republican states quite comfortably. But I know that former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg has been, you know, very much pouring money and attention and time and effort into turning both states blue. Have you had any sense of what's happening there in terms of early voting, mail-in ballots being cast, and any kind of, you know, early sense of what might happen in terms of the final result there and whether or not each state might turn blue?
Yeah, this is very interesting, actually. So all of our discussion up until now could be completely irrelevant if Florida turns blue. And Florida, unlike much of the rest of the country, has a lot of experience in dealing with mail-in ballots. It has an older population. Lots of people voted by mail. The system is set up to deal with large numbers of mail-in ballots. So basically what that means is if Joe Biden wins Florida by a healthy margin, we could know on the night that he has won the election. I mean, if he wins Florida, it's near impossible for Donald Trump to win. So that's what a lot of Democrats and that's what a lot of Biden supporters are hoping for, is that we get a clear result in Florida on the night. Texas is a strange one because something's happening there that hasn't happened in previous years. The number of people voting there is just early voting, I mean, is off the scale. You have some counties now which have already surpassed their total number of votes for 2016. And a lot of these counties are in Democratic areas around Austin, for example, where lots of people have moved from all around the country. Austin is this huge growing city. So if we get a clear result in Florida on the day, none of this could matter. The danger is if it's not close, or sorry, if it's very close and it takes a while to decide the winner, or if Trump wins there, that makes a state like Pennsylvania and these other Midwestern states that aren't used to dealing with mail-in ballots, that puts the pressure on them. And they aren't expecting to deliver their results on the day. So that means we could wait for a few days to know who the winner of the election is. And that's when things kind of get messy. That's when the courts come into play. That's when the Supreme Court might be called in to decide what happens with these votes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A Supreme Court of course now, which is has got six judges on the court who are Republican conservative leaning, three of whom were appointed by President Trump and three of whom are Democrats, of course. So, you know, that you would think if that does come into play that Trump might think he would have any decision that court makes in the bag.
Yeah, there's this kind of fascinating legal battle or preparation for a legal battle going on now, especially in Pennsylvania. It's really not clear which way the Supreme Court would go on this. And it's not clear what kind of precedent they would use to try and stop mail-in ballots. So this is the big concern, that Trump would somehow use the Supreme Court to stop mail-in ballots being counted in Pennsylvania. He could say, there's fraud going on here. We can't trust these ballots. The Supreme Court must throw them out. And in that scenario, Trump would have this lead on election day votes, in-person votes, and he could potentially take the state. This preparation, the Pennsylvania Democrats and people in government there, state election officials, the attorney general, they're kind of working frantically to try and prevent any sort of legal challenge to these ballots. And one of the things they've done recently is they're separating mail-in ballots that have been received already they're going to separate them from ones that arrive late, and those are the ones that are in contention. I'm getting into the bit of the weeds here, but there's a battle going on at the moment as to whether mail-in ballots that arrive after election day but are postmarked before election day can be counted. It's not sure whether they can be yet. So the Pennsylvania Attorney General is separating them from the rest in order to stop them being all of those votes being thrown out. So it's just one example of how Pennsylvania Democrats have just completely mobilized to try and fight these legal battles, and the ones that are happening now.
And I suppose it's also interesting to point out that as recently as this week, and then several months ago, two of President Trump's Supreme Court nominees, both Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh, have been involved in siding with the Democratic justices on the court and ruling against what one would imagine President Trump would want them to rule. So I suppose it's also safe to say that if it does end up in front of the Supreme Court, those two men are not necessarily in the pocket of President Trump in a way that he would like to think that they were, given they were his choices for the court.
Yeah, it's been a mixed bag, actually. You've had some go his way and some go against him. At the moment, the biggest issues are whether to count mail-in ballots that are postmarked before the election but arrive afterwards. There's debate over how many days you should allow those votes to be counted. And the president was tweeting this morning, actually. He expressed some frustration or just kind of looking ahead, saying if they decide this way, it's going to be a disaster. Joe Biden will win, it'll be a disaster for the Supreme Court. He's talking directly to the Supreme Court judges. It's not clear which way they'll rule. And I don't think if you actually speak to people, legal experts and election monitors in Pennsylvania, they're confident that the votes will be counted. It's going to be messy. There's going to be legal battles, but they're not worried. If you speak to them, they are, and I've spoke to many of them in Pennsylvania, especially, they're confident that the votes will be counted. There could be a lot of shouting. There could be a lot of accusations of a rigged election from the White House. But the actual legal measures that Trump has at his disposal to stop them being counted are very few.
So at this stage, do you think it's fair to say that President Trump and his administration are in any way panicking around the idea of the strength of the turnout for this early voting and mail-in voting?
You can go over to President Donald Trump's Twitter feed to kind of see, to kind of get a judge of that yourself. But yeah, I mean, even for the past, I'd say 4 or 5 months, you can see the attacks on mail-in ballots from the White House is something completely new. This isn't a normal thing for a president to, without any justification or any evidence, suggest that this election is going to be rigged and that mail-in ballots are vulnerable to fraud. This is a completely new thing. And if you want to kind of judge the motivation for making these claims, you have to look at the advantage that Democrats have in mail-in ballots. I mean, that's probably the most reasonable explanation for why there's been such a focus and attention on these mail-in ballots.
I mean, is there anything else one could point to that really, aside from general attacks on the idea, the notion of the fraudulence of postal voting, that would say that the president and his current administration are trying to do anything else in terms of curtailing people's liberty to vote as they choose?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you could. Their argument is that this is just a completely unprecedented election, and because of the overwhelming number of mail-in ballots, there's a real danger here that things get messy, and there is a real danger that mistakes are made. And their argument is that we need to be extremely careful in how we deal with these mail-in ballots, and there needs to be strict rules about how long they can be counted after they come in, where the ballots are going, and so on. So their argument is the same as the Democrats, but from the opposing side, is that they want to protect the integrity of the election. And the Democrats say it's their argument is that the Republicans aren't trying to protect the integrity of the election at all. They're just trying to make They're trying to make it harder for people to vote because that benefits them.
So do you think that things like, post mailboxes disappearing from the streets, and as you mentioned earlier, the idea that there's one, I think, is it the largest voting district in Texas being reduced to getting 4.7 million people to use one mail-in ballot center. Do you think these are all, it's just kind of indicative of an administration under fire and really beginning to feel the heat and beginning to believe the polling, which shows that Biden has a really comfortable lead?
I think it's a mixture. A lot of these changes are kind of just state level things. Some of the US Postal Service changes, for example, you could also make a good argument that they were kind of normal business as usual. It just speaks to the general fear around this election. I mean, you speak to voters today, there's never been this kind of question as to whether their votes will be counted. This is a new thing. And it's just this atmosphere at the moment around this election. And there's been polls to kind of show this as well on both sides. For the first time in decades or forever, for some people, they're just not confident that this will be a fair election. So all these small changes that you're talking about, the limiting of ballot boxes, the removal of post boxes, that just adds to this general atmosphere, which is, yeah, like I said, it's a completely new thing.
And in the various trips that you've made, and you've made many, you know, you've been to Florida, Georgia, you've been to Pennsylvania, you've been, you know, you're based in New York. I mean, what has really surprised you the most about this election campaign?
What surprised me is that the Trump campaign hasn't really changed its 2016 strategy. It kind of tried to use the same playbook in terms of trying to hammer his opponent and bring down their favorable ratings to make it a close election. What surprised me from what I'd seen on the ground going out to these places is the turnout. Turnout is one of those things that's really, really hard to predict in polls, because like I said earlier, people aren't very good at predicting whether they're going to go out and vote or not. Lots of people say they do, lots of people don't in the end. In Georgia, in the early voting polling stations, there were huge lines. People were queuing for 6-7 hours on the first day of early voting. Days later, when I arrived, they were queuing for 2-3 hours in early voting. In North Carolina, young people are registering to vote, have registered to vote, and are voting early in record numbers compared to 2016. I think there was a threefold increase compared to 4 years ago. So what surprised me is just how engaged people are in this election. And I think that's going to be, it could be a deciding factor on the day. You have all these people, young people who may not have voted in 2016. There are indications that people of color are turning out in numbers they didn't in 2016. So that could be the shocker on the day when we get the results.
I mean, is there any sense in the people that you speak to? I mean, you've mentioned that there's a lot of fear. People are frightened of their vote not counting or being counted. Do you think that there's any sense of general conviction that, you know, we're going to go out and make sure that, you know, this goes the right way in a way that wasn't there in 2016? There's been a lot of discussion. You've mentioned, for example, people of color getting out and voting, and how when you were in Georgia, there were limitations put on their ability to vote. And people are saying that, for example, Hillary didn't poll terribly well with people of color, and that in a way that Biden actually has a much healthier support base in the southern states, particularly amongst people of color. I mean, have you seen any of that kind of, you know, Americans are known for their conviction and that kind of thing. Have you seen that, you know, we're going to come out and make sure that no matter what threats are thrown our way, that we stand up and our voices are heard?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, one of the first questions I asked people in these early voting places was, why are you voting early? Why are you deciding to do this and not on the day? This is a different, I was expecting everyone to tell me pandemic, obviously. A lot of them were kind of furious about furious at this idea that their vote wouldn't be counted, or the and these threats to the integrity of the election. They were like you say, they were motivated by the idea that their democracy was under attack in some way. In Georgia, that was especially the case. It's kind of amazing. Like you say, there is this people across the political aisle have great pride in American democracy, just the ability to be able to cast their ballot and choose their leaders, like everyone does, I guess. But it is a motivating factor this year, and especially among people of color who have had, especially in Georgia, have to face a history of voter suppression.
And would you say of the various different places you went to, was there just a general sense of, you know, people who did not support Donald Trump were the ones that you spoke to and that were out and about? Or was there, you know, did you get a different sense of an atmosphere dependent on the state that you were in? And if so, what were those atmospheres like and how did they differ between states?
Yeah, it's very hard to get that impression from campaign trail. What I will say is that among early voters, so if you go to the early voting stations, especially in Georgia and in Philadelphia, the most people who were voting early, who I met, were Democrats, and that's kind of a traditional thing anyway. More Republicans vote on the day in person historically, but I think the Democratic advantage in early voting has grown this year because of what we spoke about the pandemic and them taking it more seriously. Outside, there were a couple of examples that go the other way. I mean, you can speak to people at campaign events, for example. And I went to Western Pennsylvania to do a story about Trump's support there. That was one of the biggest shockers in 2016. Was how strong his support was in these previously Democratic rural former coal mining areas where industry had kind of died out. And in those places, actually, support for Donald Trump hasn't really decreased since 2016. I spoke to a lot of coal miners, for example, former coal miners who were still dead keen on Trump. Trump came to Western Pennsylvania in 2016 and promised to bring back coal. He promised to invest in industry there. Hadn't quite panned out like that. So I was expecting to see a kind of drop in support there. Wasn't the case. What's happened there is kind of a shift from where the unions used to be very strong there. And because the unions were strong there and industry was strong, Democrats did well. When industry died out, you had this socially conservative population there who had no reason to vote for Democrats anymore. Because the unions weren't as strong, so they started voting for Republicans, and that's been a shift that's going on there. So there's enthusiasm for Trump. You can see enthusiasm for Trump in these places, and his rallies as well. For example, if you want to kind of judge how well a candidate's doing based on rallies, I mean, Trump's far ahead. Obviously, the enthusiasm and the support for him there is massive.
And when you've been out and talking to people, has anyone been particularly vocal about what they thought of the fact that the president is continuing to do in-person rallies versus the Biden approach to kind of generally more digitally based events and that kind of thing in terms of, you know, the idea of public health? What have people's attitudes been around that?
So in that regard, I've only spoken to people, supporters of Donald Trump. I went to one of these rallies that was criticized for potentially being a super spreader event down in Orlando. It was outside. It was just outside of Orlando, but it was a huge, huge rally. I think around 7,000 or 8,000 people there probably. The president has defended these rallies and his staff has defended these rallies, saying that outside there's very little instances of people catching coronavirus when they're outside. If you look at these events, everyone's packed together. And because of the confusing messages from the White House and from the president around mask wearing, the use of masks is really pretty low. You look around the crowd, I guess maybe around 20-30% of people were wearing masks, and they were packed in very close together. And there have been a number of instances where some of these rallies have caused outbreaks of the coronavirus among people that went to them. So, I mean, if you talk to a Trump supporter, they're... Again, this goes back to the polarization around the coronavirus. They don't believe it's as bad as the media says, as public health officials say, and they're more prone to playing down the seriousness of the virus than their opponents.
Finally, what's your prediction for Tuesday night?
You can't ask me that. do you know what? I think everyone was scarred by 2016. Everyone was so sure in 2016 that Hillary Clinton was going to win, and she didn't. And it was this huge shock, and it required this kind of inward looking from the media about how we report on elections and how we look at polls, and whether we were speaking to the right people. This year, if you look at the polls, they all suggest that Joe Biden is going to win. But there's still a small chance that Donald Trump could win. I think there's around 15% chance. And if you speak to the pollsters, they'll say that's not an insignificant number, 15%. And equally, there's kind of an equal chance of Donald Trump winning as there is as a Biden landslide. So it could go either way. We could see on the night Joe Biden win this election by a landslide, or we could see Donald Trump run away with it. It's very difficult to say.
Well, I think on that final perfect soundbite of it being impossible to call right now, given, as you say, everyone's aversion to believing a pollster after not just the 2016 election, but, you know, other political events here in Europe as well. I think we can draw that to a close. Rich, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. Do remember you can get in touch on our various social media platforms using the hashtag behind the headlines. We'd love to hear from you. Alternatively, you can read all the latest news and information on the election. You can follow live right through the night on Tuesday, the 3rd of November, on our website, independent.co.uk. And please subscribe to the series Behind the Headlines on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen, and leave us a rating so more people can find us. Thanks for listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.